Hi, this is Bill Moseley, and you're listening to Quality Time Podcast. Hey, lick my plate, you dog dick.
Maybe I try too hard. Maybe that's what I'm guilty of most. Is trying. I have a ponytail right now.
Yeah, bro. What's going on with your life?
I am living a wild man's life now.
You know what's happening is that Trump is making it okay to be white trash. And so, like, it's like when you freeze to death and you just, like, accept it. Like, you just slide into it real soft.
I have become the people from Walmart I always feared I would become.
Ever since Trump got elected, I stopped bathing. And now And now I fill an almost an entire jar of cheese from my crotch every week. So
a jar of cheese.
Every word in that sentence was terrible, and they were all together like that.
Yeah, I didn't like anything that came out of your mouth.
Taint cheese.
Taint cheese. Would you like some of my taint cheese?
But that's what I consider being white.
White man's dream is freely producing. Like taint cheese that the government doesn't have control over.
Oh, don't try to oppress me.
Wait till Feinstein gets her legislation out on dick cheese. Okay. Yeah, welcome to Quality Time, everybody. We're back. Yay! Welcome. Whoa! My name is Eric Woodworth, and thank you very much, all you Quality Timers, for joining us once again. But first, I'd like to, you know what? I'm going out of order. I normally do the guy to my right, but now I'm going to do the lady over the internet, the lady with the most, Miss Kim Callahan. Kim, how are you doing, baby girl?
Yay!
Thanks.
I can't clap.
I'm okay.
With beer in
I
my
haven't
hand.
Showered in a while.
Nice.
My teeth are starting to turn yellow, but you know what? That baby is fed and sleeping and content, so it's all good.
That's pretty sweet. How is the little one doing?
She's good. We're having digestive problems, so she has heartburn medication, and she cries when she gets gassy, which I hate because she's in pain, and it makes me want to just die a thousand deaths. But that's how love feels.
So
am I right?
You bore a full-grown Jeremy Woodworth? That's
I did. The psoriasis has yet to set in, but we're looking forward to Christmas.
Oh, sweet. Parmesan cheese for everyone.
Never run out.
And to my right is none other than my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing?
What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. Who is joining us on the program?
It's I, Ron Cox.
Ron Cox.
That's right.
I like Ron Cox. He's a great actor.
You have the look of your mother.
That's my favorite Ron Cox role, other than what, Wolverine? Or no, I like him as the police chief in Super Troopers.
That's right. A Scottish trooper.
I like Scottish troopers.
And they call him Denim Dan.
Fuck yeah, dude. Denim Dan, all that shit.
So much better than that other Lecter.
Yeah. Anthony who? I don't even know who that guy is. I'm
Anthony
a Dan Cox guy.
Am I right?
So, we have an amazing show lined up for you guys this evening. But first, we have to go over... I don't even have any Joe Robinson corrections, but I have a Joe Robinson legit shout-out. Joe Robinson is now obsessed with Jeremy's song, Docking with My Son. Jeremy, are you going to take those accolades? How do you feel about having fans of your new song? A fan of your new song.
You sent me the text that he sent you and how he's praising it. He's like, well, could he use a little less reverb, which instantly I text back to Joe Robinson. My only regret was... not using more reverb.
Jeremy loves reverb so much he can't get enough of it.
I didn't really go serious on him. Like, oh, why don't you just tell a little band named Pink Floyd, maybe they use a little too much reverb in a song called Us and Them on one of the greatest albums of all time. So,
okay, well, listen, you're not wrong on that tip. I mean, I enjoy a little reverb. I think that you go to the reverb well a little bit too much. It's an accent. It's not the main dish, okay?
No, that's like using not using enough star swipes in editing. So.
Next, you're going to tell me star swipes are out, and I'm fucking done. Okay.
You know, in my favorite song of all time, "Echoes" by Pink Floyd.
Okay,
so, yeah.
And how much reverb's on that one?
Oh, that's got a shit ton of reverb. Oh my gosh, makes me masturbate every time.
Yeah, and when you masturbate on with high reverb, it's like coming 10 times because you hear the echoes of it. You know what I'm talking about?
That's what children are. They're the echoes of you coming. They're just like in a grocery store, crowded, and you're tired, and they're like, "Mom!" And you're like, it's like being in a tunnel. I just keep hearing that one time I wanted to come.
Oh, awesome. Quick shout out.
Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back, Kim Ambrose. Kim Ambrose, you last week, at the end of last week, she goes, "I'm ready to get back in this motherfucking podcast game." And my pants evaporated off my body. It was such excitement. I filled you all in. We have a jam-packed October coming up, just to let you know, because this is our prime month. We do a lot of horror movies, a lot of spooky stuff, some action movies, but horror, I'd say, is one of our pillars of the show, and it is the horror month. It is Halloween coming up, and we got some real tricks or treats coming up this October, including a special interview with Mike Moran, where we're going to have a special extra episode. It might just be me and Mike Moran. I'm not sure yet, but we'll see if Jeremy can make it. But we're going to go do the movie Trick or Treat, Halloween 3, a lot of surprises and prizes this month, and I am super stoked. And I'll do a straight-up confessional right now for you guys.
Saucy.
I've never seen the movie Trick or Treat. Okay, never seen it, once. And I've heard great things about it. Jeremy, do you know when you do something and like you say something to somebody that like hurts them? Like,
yes,
like, yeah,
all
like,
the time on the internet.
I did that to Jeremy when I said I'd never seen Trick or Treat. He was like, "You bastard!" I'd never seen him more upset.
Not really. I mean, you know, you haven't seen a lot of great movies I wish you'd see.
What's the number one movie that I haven't seen that you think I should see?
The other.
Schindler's List.
I've seen Schindler's Fist,
yes.
I've seen
Schindler's Fist.
I could have fisted so many more people. So
listen, Jerry, for every good movie that you tell me to watch, you give me one street trash, though. So I question your reliability.
Well, Street Trash, that was a great movie, too.
I don't know if it is.
It's one of the greatest cameraman directors ever.
But this week,
at least you didn't watch it in German.
I didn't. Is it originally in German?
No, but I handed it to a guy with the German version, so he watched it all in German, not knowing that it was on the wrong language setting. So.
Wait a minute. You have a German copy of one of the worst movies ever made?
Yes.
I don't understand your lifestyle choices.
The fact that he watched it in German, not knowing that, of course, everybody is in a New Jersey accent in the movie. You can't tell this? These are Americans. So.
Okay, fair enough. But this week,
you guys have good Halloween plans. Like, are you setting up for anything? Are you preparing?
This is truth be told. My wife doesn't even know about this right now. I was getting ready for Halloween. Kids are getting their costumes. I'm getting my costume together, and I may or may not have bought a very expensive custom lightsaber that's going to the house. It may be showing up on my doorstep next week, and there's going to be questions about why I spent so much money on a light toy for adults. That's a thing that's happening at my house right now. I'm waiting for it to happen, and I'm going to try to explain it off by saying I'll win fantasy football this year. Anyway,
baby, I'm going to be buried with this lightsaber. This is an investment, you don't have to buy it later when I die. You're welcome.
This is going to pay for our kids' college, like, 3 or 4 lunches. Like, that is... It's good planning.
I am officially a real celebrity at Chiller Theater at the end of the month. So
what is that?
Hell yeah, you are,
what
big guy.
What is a real celebrity at Chiller Theater?
Listed on the celebrity list. And who did I beat out?
Who'd you beat?
I think I beat out the lead singer of the Motels.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
No, it's a chick. She sings Only the Lonely.
I don't know the Motels. I'm sorry. That's how... I mean, you are, in my eyes, more popular than that chick.
Well, I...
this basement, anyway.
Not a chance in hell, but either way. I'm listed there with greats like Blickenstaff, so... Blickenstaff!
The Blickenstaff.
Well, he plays a pretty good theremin, I'll tell you that.
Now, Kimberly, how about you? What are your Halloween plans? Are you getting that little bug dressed up for her first Halloween, or is that a no-go?
I'm definitely going to dress her up. I really want to dress her up as a hot dog, because that's what she looks like. She looks like a little fucking hot dog. It's adorable. but we have our stepson this year, which I'm excited about, and he's all about being Harry Potter, so I found him this cool trunk. It looks like Harry Potter's trunk, and it's got all the stuff in it. I'm excited to bust that out. He's probably going to say some snide shit like, "Whoa, why does he..." Like, shut up. Listen, you don't know what it takes to fill this fridge and then buy you a goddamn thoughtful trunk with a wand and the glasses and the robe. It's going to be awesome. Okay,
shut up.
And also, I've gone with a zombie theme this year for the Halloween decorating. Got some hands sticking up out of the lawn.
Ooh.
Got some do not enter on the front door.
Fuck,
it's gonna
yeah.
be fun. Bloody handprints in the window.
You
I'm
hired
excited.
Jeremy just to sit shirtless outside your house Halloween night. I'm like, oh my god, it's terrifying.
I play Togo.
And if I you could do paid. Like a light smearing of makeup, not anything on point, just looks like he just gave up halfway through and just smashed some of his fingers in his eye with white paint on. Terrifying.
I would dig that.
What's with the naked fat guy in your lawn? I play Togo. Oh, he's a character. Okay, got it. That's great.
Yeah, no, that's actually Togo. He lives down the street.
He's special.
He eats three lizards a day. You must. If he doesn't get them, boy, he gets real angry.
Keep your fingers away from him.
I'm going to buy one candy bar, one king-size candy bar, probably something awesome like a Snickers or Milky Way, and I'm going to put it in a bowl, and I'm going to give that bowl to Jeremy, and I'm going to say, whoever is brave enough to dare to walk up to this thing, whatever it may be, then you get the candy bar.
They have to compete with Jeremy on useless knowledge about 1980s B-movies. That's the only way you can win it.
They have to do a conversational reference contest with Jeremy.
Ooh.
Name three actors from The Toxic Avenger Part 3. Go.
Part 3, oh gosh.
This kid is like, I just like Ninja Turtles. That'd be good. I'd go to see that. Fuck those kids. They need to earn it, and they need to learn their roots. You know?
Nobody's getting a fucking trophy in this house unless you win a goddamn game. You better earn some shit.
Yeah. I don't take any... You know what? I don't really care if my kids get a participation trophy or whatever. I tell them it means nothing, but...
Kim, you say that you're being, like, really frugal, but I think you went the extra mile to actually buy the kid the special wand for Harry Potter versus saying, go out there and get a stick, you know?
Right. Well, hell yeah, dude. I have to. I'm stepmom. I have to step it up.
When you ever have to
like,
discipline
Kim
your...
Cool? Kim's the coolest.
You know, it'll be fun is because he's such a Harry Potter fan. It's like one day when you finally at that point where you have to discipline him and he has to say, pick your Harry Potter switch off the wall. He has to go outside. He doesn't want to pick the big one because that might hurt too much. But if you pick the little one, that hurts a lot. Yeah, pick the just right one.
I like a nice amount of emotional manipulation. I'll tell him to get the Voldemort one when he's like really bad, you know?
Mom, you're not supposed to speak of him. That's cool. That's cool. No, I was trying to say before that I don't give my... I let kids have participation trophies. I don't care. I tell them they mean nothing when they get them. But I never let my kids win any games that we play ever. Like any...
Yeah, hell no.
I dominate the games in this house. You put on Mario Kart, there's going to be tears, okay?
What the fuck do you know about Clue? What the fuck do you know about it, okay? If I want to use a top hat and put it in the fucking conservatory for Monopoly, I'll do that shit. I'm a father.
Not only that, I talk shit constantly. Like, I played Trouble. I played Trouble with Susie, and if you guys are familiar with Trouble, if your piece lands on the other piece that's another player's, you have to send them all the way back to the beginning. And I do things. I was just like, oh, Susie, you better hope I don't get a four here. And I click, and it's a four. Uh-oh, guess who's going home? And there's tears, and there's crying. And I was like, you know, if I make you cry so you don't play anymore, then I win. Are you giving me the win right now? Is that what it is? No, I'm still playing. Like this. I was like, you better. And she actually beat me, and I'd never seen such jubilation on a four-year-old's face when they had finally beaten their dad in Trouble.
And so, you were a little mad, weren't you? There was a part of you that was proud of her, and there's a part of you that was like, well, fucking, how about two out of three, bitch? How about we go there?
Fucking pissed.
At which point you follow your kid to their room, bouncing the basketball off their back of their head. Mm-hmm. You're gonna cry?
Sissy! I'm four!
Little man and I play checkers. I've been teaching him checkers. Ooh. And I don't let him win either. I tell him, you just got to do better. You just got to keep practicing and getting better. I forgot what I was going to tell you. Fuck. You know, this is what happens when you don't sleep. You guys, am I right?
You could do the even better to say, oh, did you still want an award for this? Oh, here's an award. Nothing. So
you get nothing. How's that feel? Pay some fucking bills. See what that's like. I remember what I was gonna say now. Thank you, Jeremy. Always Jeremy, known for keeping things on track.
Over your head. So you win.
You have to give the kids a reason to develop coping skills, because eventually one day they're gonna come home and they're gonna say, what was 9/11 like? And you're going to say, it was an inside job. And then they're going to have to find a way to cope with that. So it's like, you got to start now with a little bit of heartache here and there.
I mean, yeah, you got to do the right things for your kid. I did something. I do this thing, and I kind of picked it up when I went overseas, that I find it really fun to call people nerds when things don't work out for them. I've done it a couple of times. I did it to my coworker very recently. We were at this thing. There was the daily special. They had two at this restaurant. We were sitting down for lunch, and the one my coworker ordered was out, and the lady had to come back with like her face like, actually, we're all out of the chicken pot pie. And I immediately went, sucks to be you, nerd. And like, and my other coworker laughed, and the waitress looked at me like, what a fucking monster you are. But the best time I ever did this, I was at McDonald's, and we had gone there, and they were giving out Mario toys or whatever. And my kids had one of the Mario toys already, and I was just like, I saw that they were giving out the same one. I was like, ask the lady if they have a different one that you can have. And then they were like, hey, can we have a different toy? We already have this one. And they go, sorry, honey, that's the only one I had. And I literally went, sucks to be you, nerd.
And are you hazing your children?
My daughter was like, ugh, like this. Like my 7-year-old Jane, she's just like, ugh, whatever. But again, people, like service industry people, just look at me like I'm the biggest monster they've ever seen. Like, what a bastard. Why would he do that to his children? I was like, I'm preparing them for the harsh realities of life, okay?
Right.
That's what I'm doing.
You know what? I saw a couple at the playground the other day, and I have a fun new thing I enjoy, judging other parents. Yes! I love it. I've been welcomed into the realm of parenthood, and this is a big part of it. And I saw this this couple, and the dude was an average guy, I guess. But the lady was super tall, like really long and lanky, and like just in
songs
they call that, like a willow tree, right?
I'm listening.
You're right.
Oh, I like those slender features, those big old alien hands, like those 9-inch digits just caress your body.
They live on a water. Ugh. They live on a water planet and make clones out of people.
I like it when a woman is so tall and lanky that she can put her fucking finger and thumb all the way around your thigh and touches like a big ring.
This doesn't reach your prostate easier.
Yeah, tickle the testins.
Anyway, this lengthy bitch had her child in a stroller, and this kid could totally walk on his own. Like, he showed up in the stroller and let him out, and the first thing I thought was like zombie apocalypse. Like, what a soft bitch, right? Like, mm-hmm. This little soft doughy child isn't going to know how to just do life? Like, you won't even walk to the playground where you're going to play on your legs. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Won't he sleep better if you make him walk back and forth? I don't know. Maybe I'm mean.
No, they're too cheap to buy the leash.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I was always not a big stroller guy until I realized that the kid's stamina, that just isn't what I thought it was. Like, they get energy in spurts. That is so, it's an annoying amount of energy that they get in bursts. But when we took the kids to Disney, it was just so taxing on our bodies. And thank God my wife thinks ahead. She got, like, borrowed a stroller that is like the fancy like bike stroller with like the big ass wheels, and we cart, because like if we didn't have that, the kids would have been done after like 2 hours, and I was just like, this is an expensive ass trip, you bitches gotta get from place to place. Alright,
so I don't care if you don't want to go in the pirate cave, we paid $7,000 to get here, you're going in the pirate cave.
Shut up and look at those rapist pirates of the Caribbean one more time and be fucking happy about it.
Yo ho ho ho, we love to rape.
Yeah. The forcing of happiness at Disney World is so apparent, and it's really fun to see every other man that's there, because every man that's pushing a stroller has this look on his face that it's like similar to that of like a guy who's back from Vietnam and he doesn't understand how to adapt to society anymore. It's just this loveless sack of face who's just sitting there just like, 4 more hours, we're going to be able to go back to the room, and I'm going to be able to drink scotch whiskey until I black the fuck out till tomorrow morning. And that is just the look on every adult man there. And it is fucking primo.
So you do the same thing I do. You look to see the level of dead. You in the eyes. It's in the eyes, and it's where they hold their chin. How close to their chest is their chin?
Oh, yeah. Right? 100%. That's exactly where it is, Kimmy. So, are we ready to get into tonight's topic?
To understand Dad a little bit more about how trapped he felt as a man and how he hated life in such a way.
You know what, Jeremy? I don't know what... I do have one more thing to bring up before we get into it. By the way, all you quality timers, or if you're a first-time listener and you haven't hopped on either the iTunes or the Stitcher and dropped us a 5-star rating, why don't you go ahead and treat yourself and help us out a little bit by dropping a 5-star rating. We will read it on the show. There's a couple we have saved up, but I'm trying to get a couple more so we can do them all at once. Go ahead, hop on there. It helps us out tremendously, and we would really appreciate if you could do it. It helps us in the long run. So a little bit of giving back goes a long way. Thank you so much for listening. But Jeremy, I've been having lucid dreams lately, mostly because I haven't been, I've gone back to my old policy of don't drink during the week, which is, it's a good thing to live by. So I've been having a lot of dreams lately. I had a dream where it was me and our late father sitting down, and we were like true detectives, kind of. Like, we were in an interrogation room, and we were bringing in clergy from the church that we all knew to be horrible monster child molesters. And everyone ended up with Dad asking very straightforward questions, and me going, I'm like, oh, Dad, I don't think he's going to be able to answer that one. And then we just beat up molesters for like 5 hours in my dreams.
Welcome to heaven.
And I didn't have, you know, when you're having a dream that's so good that you don't want to wake up. I was like, man, I could do this all day. I was like, this is my dream job. So that was those were the lucid dreams.
That's such
dreams.
A noble dream of you.
And I didn't ask for it. This has never been like a thought. I'm like, oh, I mean, they're definitely deplorable people, but this just popped into my head. I was like, oh, it's my old man. Huh, we're beating up child molesters. Man, this is the greatest night of my life.
Were you going back and forth between like the what do you call it? What is that called? About the rape. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
About the rape in the Catholic school. The keepers.
Yeah, it
were
was kind of
like
that.
Between like the keepers and Dexter?
No, it was just one very squirrely looking man who clearly looks like he touched children. And we would just get to ask him questions. And Dad would be like the scary one. And I would be like, oh boy, you're not going to like what's going to happen next now, are you? And then we would just kind of beat him up. And then bring in the next one. We're ready. So,
nice.
The only scary part is that there were so many, and we just couldn't, you know. There's an 8-hour shift that you have to work, and then you have to recharge and have a life after that. So it was just, you know, the work was so plentiful, I felt like I barely had touched the surface.
I don't know if that's the wording I would use, but sure.
I'd be the cop that, you know, really is the good cop and really understands. I'm like, hey, I know. I look at that fine kid. I understand fully. Okay, we're done. Next.
Okay. Yeah, so. We're done here.
He confessed.
So tonight we are going over 1986's classic Manhunter. Which doesn't have a great intro music.
Horrible.
This is it.
This is like Sondheim music bad.
I mean, this isn't...
All the music was terrible.
Well, this is so very 80s.
This is about as 80s synth as you can get. Only Scarface is probably more 80s synth than this movie.
But that was good 80s synth.
Yeah, it just lacks any type of, like, oh, just hold down this synth button for, like, 9 measures, and then we're going to switch to this one next. Give me a couple drums in here.
There's Vangelis and one other really good synth player who did a lot of movies in the 80s, and these guys just never... I don't know if they did anything else, or they just did Michael Mann films, maybe. Oh, no, Michael Mann, he had Tangerine Dream do one of his soundtracks.
Yeah, Tangerine Dream is a great band, okay?
Definitely not these guys.
Yeah, not these freaking losers.
Unless it was one guy from Tangerine Dream and not the rest. Just Tangerine without the dream.
Now, Kimberly, this was your pick this week. What makes you pick Manhunter to come back to the show?
Oh, because this is so many things. It's, first of all, it's a deep cut. It's a deep cut. I didn't even know about this movie until, like... maybe a year and a half ago, once I found out what it was, and that, because somebody, you guys remember the show Hannibal, right?
Yes, we do.
Mads Mikkelsen,
the show or
was
the
amazing.
Movie?
The show, the movie, all that stuff. They're a series of novels written by Thomas Harris, who wrote this movie, Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon.
This is from Red Dragon, right?
I did like Hannibal, the family show, like. What are you doing with all these human parts around Hannibal?
Classic Hannibal.
It's just like Roseanne, but he eats people, so. Sorry.
Back to Kim.
He uses all the fake parts to get out of school somehow, like a Ferris Bueller type situation, but with a bag of body parts.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, this movie is from Red Dragon, but it's basically like someone took the idea of Red Dragon and said, how do we make this into a very 80s movie? It's not really Red Dragon, it's more of an 80s movie. But I didn't know that Will Turner, the character Will Turner, was a thing until I saw the show Hannibal, which, again, big fan of that show. Gillian Anderson, love of my life, she plays Hannibal's therapist. Love that. She's super sleek and sexy, and I love her.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy, Will Turner, that whole story about him is really fascinating, and I wish there was a lot more emphasis and stuff on him, more than Hannibal Lecter, sort of. Like, he is a sociopath, so he was in the FBI profiling sociopaths and murderers, and he can, like, feel their feelings when he goes in a crime scene. That's kind of amazing. What? Mm-hmm. And then his life unraveled and fell apart from his mental illness, and he can't be in the FBI anymore, so he teaches FBI students. But then they pull him back for one more case. And they're like, we're going to protect you. We're going to protect you. They don't protect him. You can't protect him from this monster. It's so great. I just love it.
Well, this movie is based on the book Red Dragon, which was, and technically this movie was remade in 2002 as the very popular movie Red Dragon, starring Edward Norton.
Not great, not terrible.
I don't. So there's parts of Red Dragon compared to this that I like better than Manhunter. Like, I think some parts are really shot well. Like, I think the guy who plays Red Dragon, who's Ray Fiennes, I believe, in
Tom Noonan,
the new one in Red Dragon, I think he is a much scarier man in Red Dragon than Tom Noonan is in this. Tom Noonan is kind of like, he's not
He's creepy, but he's not scary.
Yeah, yeah. He's not really scary. He just kind of talks. He's just like a soft-spoken guy that wants to put mirrors in your eyes.
He doesn't seem physically capable of the fear he's trying to instill in you. He's kind of like soft almost and nerdy. Like he could put his head in a toilet or something.
And I wouldn't even say he's the scary. This isn't even the best bad guy character because he plays Kane in RoboCop 2, which I fucking love him.
The only
Kane.
Thing that makes him scary is when he's actually on Nuke.
He's
not talking English anymore.
Oh god, he's terrifying now.
And now he's back to normal. Now we're gonna try this Nuke. Hey, how you doing?
And this is based on the famous series Hannibal Lecter, and this is the first of the series, The Red Dragon. The movie opens up with a breaking and entering. You see the Red Dragon, but you don't actually see who it is yet. He walks with a flashlight through the house, and I think it's a pretty ominous start to the movie where he just walks into the bedroom and shines a light on the couple that's sleeping there.
Super creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, there's gum on the stairs.
And she just kind of wakes up.
Is that like a beach house, right?
No, this one's kind of like tucked away in the woods a little bit.
It's in like a sleek, sexy kind of setting. Like they made this girl in the bed, like this female, right? They made her kind of like slowly wake up. She puts her hand in front of her face. She's like, "What's going on?"
And she's not even freaked out by the fact that there's a flashlight
at me while I was asleep. I would wake up like just a bear of a bitch. I'd be like, "What the fuck are you? Why?" It'd be so ungraceful. It'd just be middle fingers in the air and me throwing shoes. Who the fuck is shining a light on me?
This better be cute. You better be the talented Mr. fucking Ripley when I look up and then you find out it's Tom Noonan. God damn it. Are you familiar with the talented Mr. Ripley? Isn't that the movie with Kevin Costner where he's the serial killer with Dane Cook?
Kevin Costner? I think you're thinking of Matt Damon.
Is it Matt Damon?
Matt Damon.
I don't think.
Is he where he like shows you freakish things through history? Like today on the Talented Mr. Ripley, look, shrunken skulls.
Talented Mr. Ripley, believe it or not. So next we get to meet Will Graham and Jack Crawford, who are sitting on the dock of the bay. That's truthfully where they are, okay? They're sitting there.
Talking about serial killers, yeah.
Sitting on the dock of the bay, trying to break this FBI case open. Gonna meet my psychopathic partner. He is retired and somehow has a beach home on an FBI salary.
Just because he got stabbed by some crazy Lecter guy who likes to eat people.
Yeah, so.
Obviously he's supplementing his income by selling driftwood as art. Come on.
Yeah, Canadian yarn art. It sells itself. Get out there. So he's sitting there with his old Jack Crawford, who is also a character in all the Silence of the Lambs movies, played by all different actors in each one,
including Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, Larry Fishburne, classic.
Can we say that this movie probably to me just has the worst casting of any of the Silence of the Lambs movies of all?
Yes,
except for Bernie. Still good as a cop. So.
Yeah. He's still good as a cop. I agree with that. Now, Jack is able to tug on the heartstrings a little bit of Mr. Will Graham by showing him pictures of the family victims. And he's like, "Oh, man, I got kids and stuff, too. Look how beautiful my wife is walking on the beach. And my little boy, I sure hope nobody else gets murdered. I'm coming back." He's now a Southern gentleman for the rest of the movie.
Part of this movie just makes me want to destroy it so bad that he hands him a piece of paper and it's actually a special coupon thing from Burger King. He's like, "You know my weakness. I can't say no."
God damn it. When it's the Big King, $2 for $2, you know I got to come back stateside.
I lost my mind. I was in the hospital for months, but you brought me back. So
He goes and breaks it to his wife Molly that night, and it sounds like it sounds like to her that he's already made up his mind.
Do you recognize the wife?
No, I don't recognize the wife. How would
you played a skeleton in every haunted house movie?
Do you recognize the wife, Kim?
No.
I know who her name is.
She's the truck driver from Brazil. The Terry Gilliam film.
Oh yeah, that's what, you know what?
Her other big film.
That's always ready, available knowledge in my head, is a movie that I've seen one time way too long ago that I don't remember at all. Thank you very much for bringing
top,
it up.
Top three Terry Gilliam films of all time.
Okay. I like that you have a hierarchy of them.
Of course. With 12 Monkeys and Time Bandits.
Okay. Listen, Time Bandits is a great film. I like Time Bandits.
So anyway,
it's a very it's
moving
the
right
best
along.
Movie. So he breaks it to his wife. She's a little bit upset, but they make it up because you can see the clear. They basically make it up to each other by having a little sexy time that night. But when they embrace, you can clearly see the concern on Molly's sweet horny face.
It's super 80s. It's like, we're just gonna like rub each other with our hands and roll around on the bed, and there's like silk sheets and there's like music playing in the background and probably like white beach shutters. Very 80s.
And in his right hand, he's actually playing a DX7 while they're kissing.
Yes,
so.
I like it.
She's bored and she checks the time on her Casio, like, let's do this whole song.
80s sex is the best because 80s cinema sex always, it's always so sensual. There's never, first of all, this guy has like a 10-year-old kid. Like, these, they don't fucking sensual fuck anymore. You understand? Yeah. Like, there's no like, oh, we're fully nude in bed. We're draped in sheets first. There's none of that. It's, oh, I just showered, so I'm as clean as I'll possibly be right now. Let's fuck, right? There's nothing. It's more of an act than this, okay? Maybe on your anniversary, you have a little sensuality thrown in. You put on a little Jeremy Woodworth docking music and you get to it, right? Like, otherwise.
Hey. Listen, you're not respecting the dynamic of their 80s relationship, okay? He is a mysterious, educated man with a saucy past, right? Mm-hmm. That's come back to haunt him and his family and put them in possible danger. She is a skeleton. I don't know. I've got nothing else on her. She's too thin. I don't like it.
That was pretty for the 80s. Emaciated.
I know. Isn't that weird?
That was hot.
I hate to say, I really would love to destroy this movie by recasting the lead character with Philip Seymour Hoffman to just have him be like, you don't understand. I have feelings. I have to solve these murders. My feelings are so strong. Our baby John Lithgow.
I was saying to my bae that she's the body type of when the snake starts eating itself. And what I mean by that is, like, the 80s was obsessed with, like, high cheekbones, high hip bones, like, super bony, skinny. Like, you do a stair stepper, no ass, right? Like, that was the thing. And she's, like, it's 1986, so it's like we just passed the middle. Like, we're getting through the thick of it. She's when, like, a fad becomes so much of a fad that it's not attractive anymore. You know what
I
mean?
That moment,
yeah, I get it.
That moment in Scarface when Michelle Pfeiffer comes into the elevator and comes down, and Al Pacino's like, "Damn, look at that skinny crack whore!"
Yeah,
oh my
exactly.
Gosh. I just want her bones to cut me open.
Yeah, you give me 2018 Michelle Pfeiffer over 1983 Michelle Pfeiffer any day. I'll tell you that.
There
much.
She was. It was 1986, and I heard her clank her way into my heart.
Michelle Pfeiffer and the lead of this movie, Molly in this movie, look, it's like if you were to fuck Jack Skellington. Like, it is fucking hot.
No. I just want to put my penis between her breasts and rub my penis against the bony ribs on her
ooh,
torso.
It's like titty fucking barbecue spare ribs every time I'm with you, darling.
It's like my dick is a car and her chest, her bony chest, is a neighborhood with speed bumps. Well, you gotta keep it slow.
Oh, honey, I just like feeling up your xylophone-like body.
You've already written my new song, Bony TF.
Yes.
So,
next we get to see a police car pull up in front of the murder scene. And
next star,
Graham,
star alert.
Graham, oh, yeah, go ahead and mention who the star is, Jeremy.
Who's the man talking to him in the car but the mighty Quado.
Quado, yeah.
Who
yeah.
is also a freak.
He is a freak.
Yes.
He fucks. Okay, so
after he gets out of the car, I know you'll find him. You'll get your man from his belly.
I like it. Classic Total Recall reference. You know, I'd always wanted to do a Halloween costume with one of my infant children where I strapped them up like Guado to my like torso, and my wife always had to be like, no, they have to be a ladybug.
I will hopefully get my dream, which is Total Recall the musical. Mm-hmm. With, of course, Quato singing the song Open Your Mind, where he just kind of slumps his head down, but Quato's still the one singing up on stage as he moves back and forth.
That actually sounds amazing.
Open your mind!
We'll save it for the save it for the Total Recall episode, okay? Graham enters the house, and he starts walking through as if he's the murderer. He has his tape recorder, and he comes into the gruesome scene that is the bedroom that is just fucking smeared with blood everywhere, and I have a little audio clip here to give you a little bit of his deductive skills.
Entered through kitchen sliding door, used a glass cutter anchored to a suction cup. His entry was skillful. All the prints are smooth gloves. Blonde hair, strong, size 12 shoe imprint. Blood AB positive, type from saliva on glass from licking the suction cup. Why didn't he care that he left saliva on the glass? It was hot out that night. So inside the house must have felt cool to him. Intruder cut Charles Leeds' throat as he was rising, then shot Mrs. Leeds. Bullet entered right of her navel and lodged in her lumbar spine, but she died of strangulation. Moderate elevation of serotonin and marked increase of free histamine level in gunshot wound indicates she lived at least 5 minutes after she was shot. All her other injuries are post-mortem. Direction and velocity of blood stains on east wall indicate arterial spray. Even with his throat cut, Leeds tried to fight because the intruder was moving to the children's room. Blood stains on west wall of master bedroom and matted sliding marks on hall carpet remain unexplained, as does superficial ligature mark around Mr. Leeds' chest, also believed to be post-mortem. What did the killer do with them after they were dead?
Who knows?
You know, the most ironic part of this scene is that the murder didn't even take place in this room. It was just the wife having a heavy day.
Ah! You know what, Dad? It was the Brand X that she was using, you know? If she had used regular old Maxi, she would have been fine.
So anyway.
Thank you, Jeremy. Good bit. So you just get an idea of the intensity of Detective Graham as he's just really breaking down this crime scene, starting to relive it. But he seems like he's a little bit out of sorts. Like he's kind of like a guy that gets back into, comes out of retirement from a sport. They have some ring rust. Like Michael Jordan when he came back to the Washington Wizards. Wasn't the same Jordan, but we got to see flashes of grit brilliance from time to time.
My other favorite part of the scene is where he goes down and he picks up a little bit of the blood off the scene and licks it, and he's like, this isn't blood, it's maple syrup.
No, womp womp.
And he looks at the cop's like, really? No, it's really blood. I just like to lick blood sometimes. So
Graham makes his way back into the bathroom. He pops some pills. He hears a random phone call. No messages left. He heads back to his hotel, and then he starts to watch the home movies from the victims. He notes that he smashed all the mirrors in the house. He gets frustrated, though, while he's watching, almost like he's just not getting it right. He gives a call to his wife, who tells him that he loves him. And then, at about 17 minutes, we have this clip here, where he finally makes his first break when reviewing the evidence.
When they were dead, he smashed the mirrors and began selecting pieces that he would use later on Mrs. Leeds. Killing Mr. Leeds and the children would take less than a minute. Mrs. Leeds' injuries were postmortem 4 or 5 minutes later. What'd he do in the interval?
He's probably masturbating.
God, she's lovely, isn't she? It was maddening to have to touch her with rubber gloves on, wasn't it? They found talcum powder on her leg, but there wasn't any talcum powder in the bathroom. The talcum powder came out of her rubber glove as you pulled it off to touch her. You took off your gloves to touch her, didn't you, you son of a bitch? You touched her with your bare hands, and then you put your gloves back on. But while your gloves were off, did you open all her eyes so that they could see you?
Ooh, he's breaking this case wide open.
And he comes off as like a overly protective younger brother when his older sister starts dating. Like, did you put gloves on when you touched her? Huh? Did you take gloves off, you fucking sick fuck? Like, we went to a dance together and you and parents were there. I don't know why you're freaking out.
Huh, you little fuck? So
what? The next thing, you're probably wearing panties on your head.
Nah. He hops on the phone, calls Jack, and he goes, I think he took off his gloves, gets such and such to check it out, calls in an extra specialist who must be some kind of specialist in fucking talcum powder or something to go checks this shit out, and hops on the plane back to FBI headquarters, where we can see all the FBI bigwigs examining a giant model of the teeth that have been recreated, which look fucking gnarly.
You know who one of the investigators isn't?
Who?
It ain't Fuchs.
It ain't Fuchs. So, the police, though...
It's actually Bennings. I've known him for years.
But the police really have nothing. They mention to... Graham, and they kind of talk about his run-in with Hannibal Lecter before, which is the reason that he's retired, stating that Hannibal Lecter actually ended up stabbing him in their last encounter before he put him away behind bars. They also get word that they did find a print on the body, just like Graham said. Boom. Fucking blowing this case wide open once again. As they leave, they meet the sleazy reporter who's outside, and this is one thing, like, again, casting, Jesus, because this, they were like, we need you to be a sleazy reporter. And he was like, oh, like a used car salesman, I got it, that's how people sell stuff, I understand. And
I'm hoping they really wanted Dennis France for this part. So.
That's right, I do want to see Dennis France for sure. And he ends up judo throwing him through, like, the front of a car or whatever.
I think I said Will Turner. I got Will Graham confused with the Orlando Bloom character in Pirates of the Caribbean.
My children have been away at the Pumpkin Patch for like the last 4 or 5 hours.
Is that a bar?
Yes. Killing it.
That's where they hang out and chill. So, he judo throws this guy through the hood of a car. Does not leave a note. It's important. He breaks a windshield, and fucking Officer Graham gives zero fucks about it. So, I didn't really appreciate how inconsiderate of other people he was. So, this just goes to prove, more than anything, he's truly a sociopath. Next, we get to visit Dr. Lecter. Most people are familiar with good old Sir Anthony Hopkins playing Hannibal Lecter, who plays a very robotic, scary version of him. And in this movie, we get Brian Cox. So, Brian Cox plays Hannibal Lecter in this film. And listen, if you're not comparing it to Anthony Hopkins, it's not bad, okay? The problem is, Anthony Hopkins fucking nails this 6 or 7 years later. Really good. So
it's like watching the play version of The Silence of the Lambs versus the movie version. So
listen, I'm not saying you're wrong, because you're right. But at the same time, though, I do like Brian Cox's rendition of it. Because as much as Anthony Hopkins brought to the role... he's not bad, though. Like, this Brian Cox is going off nothing but the direction. And he was told to play it like a English schoolboy, Jeremy. An English schoolboy. Do you think that's accurate? Is that how you picture Hannibal Lecter?
You know. The actor brings part of himself to the role, and he did okay. And it was memorable for its time, but you know, it's I love the idea of Edward Norton playing this character better than the main guy as well. So
I think it's a toss up, but Edward Norton does a great job too in Red Dragon. I'll give him that.
I like Mr. Coyote as what's his name better in Silence of the Lambs. I like Chilton was definitely much better in Silence of the Lambs. I mean, pretty much everybody.
Okay, well, here is the meeting between Dr. Lecter and Detective Graham.
That's the same atrocious aftershave you wore in court 3 years ago.
Yeah, I keep getting it for Christmas.
He always can smell aftershave.
Did you get my car?
I got it, thank you.
And how is Officer Stewart? The one who was first to see my basement.
Stewart's fine.
Emotional problems, I hear. Do you have any problems, Will?
No.
No. Of course you don't.
I want you to help me, Dr. Lecter.
Yes. I thought so.
It's about Atlanta and Birmingham.
Yes?
You read about it?
In the papers. I don't tear out the articles. I wouldn't want them to think I was dwelling on anything morbid.
I thought you might have some ideas.
Why should I tell you?
You get to see the file on this case. And there's another reason.
Pray tell.
Thought you might be curious to see if you're smarter than the person I'm looking for.
Then by implication, you think you're smarter than me since you caught me.
No. I know that I'm not smarter than you.
Then how did you catch me, Will?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Boom.
They don't look like cop's hands anymore. And that shaving lotion is something a child would select. It has a ship on the bottle, doesn't it? Don't think you can persuade me with appeals to my intellectual vanity.
I don't think I'll persuade you at all. You'll either do it or you won't. Besides, we have Dr. Bloom working on it, and he's the best.
Do you have the file with you?
Yes.
Pictures?
Yes.
Let me have them, and I might consider it.
No.
Dream much, Will.
Goodbye, Dr. Lecter.
You haven't threatened to take away my books yet. Let me have the file, and I'll tell you what I think.
Ooh, creepy Dr. Lecter.
The best part is the end of the scene where he leaves and he asks the keyboard player to follow him out of the room with him.
All right, keyboard player, come with me.
You really added to our interview.
So he, Graham then runs out after he leaves the room with Dr. Lecter, and it has to be in the weirdest prison you've ever seen in your life. Like, what kind of prison has a rampway that goes up 8 stories down to a ground floor? Makes zero sense. Apparently, this was some museum of art that they filmed this part at, which makes it doesn't look like any type of place where, oh, this multi-million dollar building. This is where we'll keep dangerous serial killers and the mentally unstable. You know, I don't like it. That's one thing Silence of the Lambs had, was that they put all those crazies that were jerking off in their cells in a deep, dark dungeon.
Well, you don't understand the prison system in Cleveland. So, they only have 2 buildings.
It's built like M&T Bank Stadium.
Yes.
You go to leave.
Exactly. 100%.
And the worst criminal is actually at the bottom of the stadium, and he's kept in complete nitrous oxide at 0 Kelvin. So before he comes Akira again. So
outside, he goes and catches his breath, and the sleazy reporter is snapping shots of him and getting his front page news. Dr. Lecter then receives a call inside, and I thought this was kind of cool. It's very 1980s hacking abilities. Is that Lecter
hacks a rotary phone?
Yeah, he takes the thing off that has no buttons, and he's able to use a stick of double mint gum and uses the foil so he can call the operator and make a special call to Detective Graham's doctor's office, where he then tricks the lady over the line to give him Dr. Graham's address. So now Hannibal Lecter has the home address of our hero. So
I didn't realize how much a Dr. Lecter really is like a MacGyver. Because even in Silence of the Lambs, all he needs is a pen so he can get out of his handcuffs and do his thing.
Well, he's super smart, right? He's like got this super smart intellect. Brian Cox played a good British person, but I don't think he played a good Dr. Lecter. You can tell he's conniving.
Yeah.
And you can tell that he's manipulative. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't really... It's one of those things where it's like Brian Cox, the person, is probably so nice that it's kind of coming through in like him playing this role. Like, I don't believe that he's actually a terrible cannibalistic murderer.
Yeah, Brian Cox is the type of guy that would invite you into his home and give you his finest wine just because you were stopping by that day, you know?
Or he would invite you into his trailer and give you his coldest Pabst Blue Ribbon. Like, whatever it is, he's a nice guy, you know what I mean? Wherever he is on the scale.
And at the same time, Anthony Hopkins would invite you into his house, give you some fine Chianti, then show you within 45 minutes the dungeon of children he's got kept in the fucking locker downstairs, you know?
Yes, like, there's he'd do it so gracefully and with such silky suave that at first you would be like, oh, wait, this is bad. Oh, I must be drunk. I don't know. Red has tannins.
Hey, what are we drinking? Oh, yeah, Ruflin. Rape drug. Great.
Oh, good. Yes. Graham then hops on a flight and has dreams of his wife and home and his beautiful wife who's drinking Dos Equis beer. There's a very good product placement there of her just drinking Dos Equis and walking around. So, arguably, Graham maybe have been the first ever world's most interesting man. Am I wrong on this?
Yes.
Grizzled beard, hunts serial killers, could also be a sociopath himself, has a real coked out skinny wife. I mean, this is pretty legit stuff.
He's borderlining on the Batman voice.
Yeah, yes. He's then awakened by the little girl next to him who's crying because he's fallen asleep with all his murder pictures out. Oh.
Man, come on.
Like, don't you hate it when you fall asleep on a plane, you're looking at your murder pictures, and you wake up, they're strewn about everywhere, and there's a kid crying next to you. I mean, I specifically fly Southwest so I don't have to sit next to children. It's pick your own seat. Never again will I find AirTran. So, he then visits the vacant house near the murder scene, one that has a perfect view of the crime scene. He's not seeing the right kind of sight lines there. He makes his way back into the woods where he finds some debris, an empty candy wrapper, and then he looks up the tree. Yeah. He looks up the tree and then has to show off his sweet fucking rope climbing skills because there's a tire swing that's like on this same tree. He climbs up and gets to the top of this tree and can see that this part of the tree where he's up at has a direct line of sight into the house.
Can I say I'm so happy that they chose the brand name of Mars versus either Whatchamacallit or Zagnut as one of the rappers that he would find. So
Zagnut. For murderers.
It puts the nut in Zagnut.
Well, if he had had a Snickers, he immediately would have just become a regular guy. Like,
if he sees,
hey, maybe have one of these Snickers. Why? Huh, you know, when you don't eat, you become a homicidal maniac.
You were acting kind of like the Tooth Fairy just now, so.
Oh, better? Yeah, I'm much better now. Thanks, Dr. Lecter.
So, this is the part when he starts doing that thing, like, you know, in TV shows and movies where they have to say stuff that's for the audience,
yes.
Even though, like in Grey's Anatomy, doctors will explain things to each other that they wouldn't say to each other because they're doctors, they just fucking know it.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, this is the part of that movie where he does that. So he's like, he sees that he can... The killer has been sitting in the tree watching them. And then he starts like monologuing his thoughts to the audience, kind of to the side, right? He's like, you son of a bitch.
You were sitting
here watching them the whole time in this fucking sick treehouse of fantasies. You sick son of a bitch. Like, at what point, like, he's been in this business for like, what, 10, 12 years?
Yeah.
Like, after a while, don't you go, okay, line of sight, got it, I'm going to measure, da-da-da. Like, his feelings are so hurt.
Yeah.
Real cops, they just look at each other and they go, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck,
right.
Fuck.
Right.
Look at this shit right here.
Fuck.
Either that or they contemplate how reality is just one big giant circle. You know, that is the only things that...
The greatest episode of The Wire where they just have a whole scene saying fuck to each other. So. Yeah.
Now, while he's up in the tree, though, he does see that the red dragon has carved something into the tree up there. This odd pentagram-looking pagan symbol that he's
it's just a penis. So. You know what I mean? A large penis.
Oh, we've deciphered the code. What does it mean? Drink more Ovaltine. I don't know why he would have put that up
here. We deciphered it with a special ring from the 50s. So.
That would be good if they mashed this movie up with A Christmas Story. That would just be magical.
You are the red dragon, Leroy! Okay. Who is the master?
That one might be the best mashup we could do. The last red dragon.
Yeah.
Next they get word from another FBI agent that they found a letter they think is from the Tooth Fairy in Dr. Lecter's cell. And I have some audio here of that note.
Cell. It was hidden in a book.
Dr. Chilton, don't touch the note. Can you read it to us?
It's written on toilet tissue. My dear Dr. Lecter.
And it's not even two ply. This fucking animal.
I wanted to tell you I'm delighted that you've taken an interest in me. I know that you alone can understand what I am becoming. You alone know the people I use to help me in these things are only elements undergoing change to fuel the radiance of what I am becoming. Just as the source of light is burning. I have a collection of your press clippings. I think they are absurd, as are mine. The Tooth Fairy. What could be more inappropriate? Investigator Graham
interests me.
Very purposeful looking. I hope we can correspond. Mr. Graham, there's a piece missing here. Now I'll read the bottom part. After I hear back from you, I might send you something wet. Signed, Avid Fan.
Ooh.
These are commercial. Ew.
And he means his bodily
fluid. Like, what do you mean? Ugh.
So, yeah, they read over it, but there's a part of it missing in between that looks like it was blacked out with a felt tip pen, and then they show us the next, like, 20 minutes of this movie are they showing the high-tech 80s forensics, which is, first of all, makes no sense. There's just one room where they're examining the toilet paper, like, this little part, and there's just a giant laser in the room that's just shining, like, towards the... There's no reason for this laser to exist in this thing, but they got a laser. And I guess, Jeremy, in 1983, it was just the existence of a laser. Like, oh, this is, I don't know what this is solving, but this has got to be big time right here.
You know what's going to solve this murder? The magic crystal. Put the magic crystal on it and we'll know. Okay?
If you wrap the paper around a pet rock and leave it under your bed for two full moons.
If you put the time machine... If you put the time machine between your legs... It hurts! It doesn't work! Tell me, I tried it already.
The funniest part is that in the 1970s, when they started to be able to make, you know, the first type of lasers, and like lasers started to become for commercial use in the 80s, who would have thought the guys that spent years mastering this art and science of manipulating light in a way that it can be this bright beam whenever you want to shine it, and all it gets used for is to shine in people's eyes when you're at wrestling events and ruin it for the rest of us. Like, that is the pinnacle of what lasers
are
used for.
Don't forget pop balloons.
Yeah, and pop balloons.
It's the future of cat toys.
Yeah, just there's some guy who's working on the laser technology. There's like, you understand, one day all our cats will be hybrid and very fit from using this toy and tool. One day we'll be able to project patterns that actually look like a real mouse. I'm calling it the laser mouse.
There'll only be two people that'll be able to afford lasers. The Who and Bill Gates.
So they go through all this forensic evidence back and forth, and they find out that the part that's torn off, they think, said Tattler, which happens to be the newspaper that the sleazy journalist works for, and what they must be passing their messages between each other through.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good little clue they found out there.
Good little thing that they took from the Zodiac with Paul Avery actually talking trash about the Zodiac and him threatening his life. Well, you did call him a latent homosexual.
Yeah.
Don't know why he wants to kill you.
So, then they're sitting in a big room, and I pulled this audio just for Jeremy. It is all the FBI bigwigs discovering and talking about this new information that they have. And there's a very special actor who drops this one line in the movie here.
Cleans are commercial granulated cleanser with chlorine from the cleaning man. Several particles of dried blood, but not enough to type.
I tasted it myself.
Ooh. Yes, it's none other than Chris Elliott. Chris Elliott making an appearance.
The star of the film.
At the 45-minute mark of this movie.
Finally, a true actor.
Yes.
Eagleheart.
Ooh.
It just, all I'm doing is watching him in the scene as he's like banging his fingers around, acting like a fucking dark. Like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious.
I also think it's really funny because I'm a Chris Elliott fan too, much like Jeremy. But do you ever just watch him? Like, everybody else just kind of sits at the table and like looks forward. But Chris is moving around and staring at the person who's talking and walking around. And he just looks like a fucking idiot the whole time. Like he's twisting his head. I don't know. If you go back and watch, and just knowing who Chris Elliott is very, very funny to watch him in this role.
Oh, gosh.
Now, Jeremy, better Chris Elliott role, this or The Abyss?
Oh, obviously The Abyss. Mm. Look, it's Bud! So, or let's not forget the TV version of The Abyss, where they're at the bottom of the ocean. It's like, I don't think you understand. The TV's not working at all. We don't even have cable. Help! Help! Which they ran a couple of things with him and what's his name on David Letterman. So
they can't decide what they want to do with this new knowledge that Lecter and the Tooth Fairy are having correspondence. So they decide to let Lecter's new ad run so that they can try to figure it out before the next lunar cycle, which is when the Red Dragon will attack again. But at the same time, they also try to bait the Red Dragon by putting out false information about the case. So they decide to go and take pictures with the sleazy reporter and Detective Graham. They make the front page as they give him all this information that he's probably impotent and a homosexual, that he... I like it because it's the 80s, so if you say you fuck dudes, oh man, you're the worst kind of fucking monster in the whole world. And at the 51-minute...
Well, if you fuck dudes in the 80s, it means you're a Satanist because you don't want to live and you just want to spread AIDS and you hate everyone. I mean, am I far off? I don't think I am.
I mean, I don't think much has changed, Kimberly. I mean,
what do you mean in the 80s? That's cute.
Yeah, maybe in the 2080s.
I'm so glad we got over AIDS. So,
next, at the 51-minute mark...
I hate to throw this out there, but I'm pretty sure that the sleazy reporter is like the guitarist from Talking Heads. Just because he looks like him. That's
okay.
All. Thank you.
So,
no, thank you, Jeremy. Thank you.
I do like how sleazy this reporter is. He's like, so what do you think? You and me take a little picture up here? And maybe, I feel like all the time he's like ready to slap a newspaper. He's like, this right here, Graham, you're going to be on the front page news any day now. Just hop over here, get in this picture with me. Next thing you know, you'll be fucking bitches at my rock. He's just such a fucking horrible cast. So
he's basically a college sports like recruiter.
Yes, exactly.
He's like, life will be great. It'll be great. Just come over here and do this thing. It's super simple. By the way, you've had sex with your mom, right? I'm just going to write that down. Don't respond. It's fine.
The Jared Leto of the movie. So.
So, yeah. Next, but it's all in an effort to put the Tooth Fairy on to Graham to get him to come out to attack Graham in public.
We won't protect him.
Yeah. So, next we hear this line, which is the titular line, not of this movie, but of a future film.
You found him in a tree?
Yeah.
It's Chinese character considered a lucky sign in gambling. The same character appears on a mahjong piece. It means red dragon.
Ooh.
Mean anything to you?
So they got the little thing that's carved into the tree means red dragon.
Did you just say that this is the titular lion?
Not of this movie, but of the movie Red Dragon. Oh. But in this movie, because this movie is Red Dragon, but it's called Manhunter. You know, this movie was supposed to be called Red Dragon, but there was a movie that had come out the year before called Something Dragon. It was like some kind of like mystic Chinese martial arts movie, and it was such a commercial flop that the studio refused to call this movie Red Dragon because the stink of that movie was so bad, so they had to change it to Manhunter.
So they couldn't write it into this film where Crawford actually says to him, like, you have to get him. You are the Manhunter.
Yeah, they do say Manhunter.
He looks right into the camera when he says it.
I don't think the word Manhunter is said, but if you look at the article that's written, it says Manhunter. He's mentioned as the Manhunter in the article.
And I would have written a really bad 80s song at the beginning. Manhunter! You're the Manhunter, yeah!
Manhunter, you'll get caught up in the Manhunter. That's like the
I like
cross
Manhunter ball. Better. It's a better title. It's fun. It goes hardcore. And here's the question. Who is the Manhunter in question? Is it Dr. Rector because he hunts and kills people through his manipulation? Is it the Tooth Fairy because he kind of also does that? Or is it Will Graham who goes after these dudes via his cunning wit? Who is it?
Truthfully, if you're asking me personally, Kimberly, the real Manhunter is Brian Dennehy from Rambo Part 1. But that's just me. Or is it John Rambo himself? Who knows? So
we're kind of stuck with the name Predator for now.
So Graham is still having flashbacks of going back home. The job is starting to get to him. Luckily, his wife is always ready to make it better with some naked time. Next, we see him leaving the FBI lab, and he's got eyes all over him, snipers watching him. Graham sees a jogger kind of coming at him, and he's ready to go. He's got his hollow point bullets that he got from
Eric,
the FBI.
Eric, let's not be rude. It's Jogga.
Jogga.
Okay. That was a little aggressive.
Whoa.
Jogger.
Whoa. As the jogger comes up to him and is about to pass by, fucking Graham takes initiative and fucking Goldberg spears the fuck out of this guy, takes him off his feet. Cops come out of the woodworks, draw guns on him, and they find out just a regular black dude just getting his jog on in the middle of the night, which they let him go upon his way, which I would find is probably, from what I understand about how the police work, would never have happened in real life. That black guy goes to jail that night for being black in a place.
I just think it was more ironic when he emptied his gun on him. He's like, oh, wrong guy.
Oh, sorry about it. Oh, he was unarmed. Quick, sprinkle crack on him.
In tonight's news, police overexerted themselves by attempting to capture a black man who was running through a park minding his own business, and they basically ruined his life and reputation. Or in other news, par for the course, business as usual. Yes.
The end of the movie Creed.
I mean, again, this is whitewashing of America. How many times are we going to see a white guy actually make a tackle on a black guy? I mean, it just doesn't happen very often.
Because black guys will just jump right over you in real football.
Exactly. They're very, very good at sports compared to white people. But
hockey,
white people,
is as good as over.
I like how you very, in a docile way, danced away from the weird thing that Jeremy said to being like, I'm going to say something similar, but not as rude.
Not as rude. See how I dance around and use my words and eloquence to make it not sound as bad? Jeremy goes full alt-right, though, and I just can't...
Because I'm old and I'm insensitive.
Thank you for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I've been Eric Woodworth, and I'm trying to continue a career in comedy. Thank you.
I love Devon Brent.
There will be a time if I ever make it in comedy where I will have to answer questions about Jeremy Woodworth, like as a hearing. Yeah. And I will just say, you know, it's just such a lovely evening is what I will answer every
time.
As
long as my comedy isn't as offensive as James Finn's.
Yeah, so. James Finn is a monster.
Gosh,
everybody knows that.
I never know a person to use the N-word as much.
But, you know, you know what I'll do is when I get that interview with Jeremy, I'll be like, listen, you know, my brother was a completely normal guy until he got indoctrinated by James Finn. I mean, go back and look at his writings and his teachings. You'll see where he went wrong. I'll pin it all on James Finn. That's So Graham's fucked up. He's just tackled a regular guy. They fail to realize that he wasn't going out for him, but he was going after the reporter. And at the 58-minute mark, halfway through the movie, we finally get to meet our killer! Dun, dun, dun.
Mr. Stocking Face.
Yes, Mr. Stocking Face. I will admit, you see the reporter. He's tied up in Francis's house. His name is, the Tooth Fairy's name is Francis Dollarhide.
Francis.
Which is,
okay. Is he a friend of Brett Kavanaugh's? Jesus Christ.
But he does look pretty creepy. And first of all, actor Tom Noonan just looks like a creepy person. But when you put pantyhose just over the top part of his face, he looks fucking terrifying. And he sits there and he talks in a very, very docile voice. And I have a little audio here of what happens with the Red Dragon as he meets this sleazy reporter.
Look at the screen. William Blix, the Great Red Dragon, and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun.
He's got the slideshow up on the wall.
Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
Mrs. Jacoby, do you see?
Yes.
The next family as they will look when I go to visit them. Do you see?
Yes.
Mrs. Leeds, later, her husband beside her.
Yes.
Mrs. Jacoby, after her changing, the dragon rampant. Freddie Lowndes, your photograph.
No.
No what?
No.
Shows him a picture of himself.
Do you imply that I'm queer? God, no.
You're very manly with it. For
me,
on your face.
You're a slug in the sun. You are privy to a great becoming, and you recognize nothing. You're an ant in the afterbirth. Is your nature to do one thing correctly? Tremble. But fear is not what you owe me. No, Lowndes. You and the others. You owe me awe. Well, we have one more piece of work to do.
It goes over. And he pulls out a tape recorder, makes him read this fucking note.
Open your eyes! You read this?
I have had a great privilege. I have seen with wonder and awe the strength of the Red Dragon. All I wrote about him were lies. Will Grant made me write them to pull him into a trap in Washington District of Columbia. Will Graham, you will learn from my own lips how much you have to dread because I was forced to lie. He will be more merciful to me than to you. You will lie awake in fear of what the Red Dragon will do. I will be a testament to the truth of this.
So he's very scared.
This is my favorite part when he starts dancing to Stuck in the Middle with You.
Let me go now, so. Please.
Yes.
You will tell the truth.
I promise.
Good.
So he walks over. He throws in his giant chompers that he has.
We'll seal your promise with. We'll seal your promise.
I would have added a little bit of Buckman and Garcia to the scene. He's got the Pac-Man fever.
And then he goes and bites his fucking face off.
Pac-Man fever.
You'll get
driving
caught up in the...
crazy.
Pac-Man fever.
Can't you see what Red Dragon's done to me? Can't you see?
So, yeah, pretty creepy scene. If we were to compare the two, now this is... it's definitely creepy to see Dan Noonan, but Ray Fiennes, I think, nails this in Red Dragon. Do you see? Much scarier. I think it's his muscliness in Red Dragon, where I feel like, he's really going
to
rip my face off.
This whole thing is a play version compared to the movie version. It just plays, it's so toned down.
I mean, yeah. You have to think about where we are, though. Had you seen anything like this up until that point, Jeremy? 1986.
I think people were way too coked up to actually act in the 80s. So.
You think so?
I think so. They're too high. You know, turn it up. Turn it up to the cartoon acting that I love from the Coen brothers.
So Jack tells Graham that they had that they finally broke the code. But all of a sudden, we're back at the parking lot where the reporter had been abducted. Guy's sitting there, and he looks over down the ramp. And sure enough, it's none other than the reporter's flaming body on a wheelchair running 100 miles per hour, which is pretty fucking metal looking, right? Like, he comes down.
So awesome.
But the guard's reaction goes, oh my god! And he runs for his life. I mean, I don't know if I run for my life. I go, what is that? That is odd. For sure.
Like, I don't usually see a guy on fire on a wheelchair. That's weird.
So he comes.
Dude, stop protesting Vietnam. It's over.
I like the one part that they cut out of this movie because, you know, obviously 80s homosexuality not really accepted. And he's like, I'll show you who's the flaming fag. And he pushes it.
Wow.
That's the part they cut out of the movie, which is unfortunate. But
they kept
it's
it
different
with
times.
Seymour Hoffman.
Yes.
As he was in drag.
Well, Philip Seymour Hoffman is also such a better actor for that movie as well. Because I like seeing anything where Philip Seymour Hoffman cries, I like. Like, he is such a good crier, you know?
I just want to see him put his crying head against Robert De Niro.
Yes. Now that they've broken the code, they find out that Lecter gave the killer his home address in the thing. So he tries to calm him down, but Graham immediately freaks out, and he goes to head back home. There's a tense scene of his fucking gaunt-ass wife walking through the house, and she finally gets to the front door, and it's kind of like this tense moment, and it's just the police. The police are out front. So she is safe and sound, and there's no problems at all, and they put her into protective custody. Now, one major difference between Red Dragon and this movie is this part happens at the very end of Red Dragon, and it's like a big ending scene where the Red Dragon is now trying to kill his family, and, you know, they never break the code until it's too late, and then, you know, our hero is forced into one final showdown with the Tooth Fairy at his own home, nonetheless, and, in this one, they never go back to that, the fact that they had his address, the guy never comes. I feel like it's a wasted point in this film, unfortunately.
Edward Norton has to dress up like his wife with the same hairdo, and as the Tooth Fairy comes up on him, he's like, realizes, oh, it's Ed Norton, no. Oh.
Are you telling me that in the movie Red Dragon?
Okay, I never saw Red Dragon, so I'm just kidding.
Edward Norton uses Bugs Bunny-like techniques to apprehend a serial killer.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the Stallone movie Nighthawks, he's actually Lindsay Wagner. So.
I just wanted to be clear that that's where you stand.
Okay, it was Nighthawks with Sylvester Stallone. Stillvester.
Stillvester. That's what he named his stillborn son. Sylvester Stallone.
Oh.
I like it. That was a good pun. So they take him to protective custody. Graham talks to custody. I'm a eloquent speaker. Graham talks to his wife and finds out that his son is scared for his life to leave him with his mom because he sees that, oh, Dad, when he's investigating murders, he gets a little murdery. And he has a bonding moment with his son saying he never hurt them as long as you do your fucking homework. And he talks to the kid. His kid is a nothing of merit that you really get much out of this. And then you see this weird scene where he kind of looks at the camera and he goes, I'm going to find you, god damn it. And next we get to the movie kind of flips, because now we get to kind of learn about our killer, the Tooth Fairy. We get to see the killer's day job. He works at some type of photo processing lab, and he has a love interest there, none other than a beautiful blind lady named Reba. And Jeremy, what other movie did we do where this actress who plays Reba is in? It is a very famous movie that we did that you fucking hated.
Is it a movie that I didn't watch all the way?
Yes, I think. I don't think you finished it.
Okay, so then that was the one with... that was a Michael Mann film also. No. Okay, just tell me. I'm too slow.
It's she plays... this is actress. Let me get her name right
here.
This
is the Nicolas Cage film with
yes.
With John Travolta.
Yes, you got it.
Okay.
So it's Joan Allen, who also plays the wife in Face Off. So
okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who has had a lot of work done recently, doesn't look like Joan Allen anymore. Kind of weird to see her face.
She looks like the lead singer from Dead and Alive.
She looks so shiny, like very oily. Like she got an oil transplant on her face.
It's weird, right? Like, that level of plastic surgery is definitely a mental illness.
Mm. I don't see. I mean, I thought Michael Jackson was perfectly sane. I don't understand where you would get that from. No, I do think it's really weird to see, like, super plastic surgeried people. And I think it's a personified none other. The best personification of this is definitely a movie we'll have to do in the future. But Escape from L.A., when we get to see Bruce Campbell as the surgeon, the super plastic surgery guy who's just already.
Oh, yeah.
He's like the doctor who's like, you got great cheekbones there, Snake. And he's just the doctor who has everything. Thing done to his face. Looks like the Duracell battery commercials that were really creepy. Yeah, that's that
good
level
Primus
of practice.
Commercial. Yeah.
But yeah, plastic surgery sucks. So listen, love you, okay? Love the things that about you, unless your nose is too big. Get that fixed. But other than that, like be a human peak. Maybe get some liposuction if you can't lose the weight. I'm thinking about it, but love yourself
first.
Not
the weight, it's the extra skin.
Yeah. Jenna Jameson going through some stuff, and she's a whore, so you do the math. So we get to see the killer's day job. There's some sexual tension right off the bat, and Reba actually asks our Mr. Dollarhyde out on a little date. And it is the weirdest fucking, like, watching him at his day job is like watching how an incel lives. Right, Kimberly?
poignant reference, yeah.
I thought so. Because it's very incel. It's always just like, oh, you're not... He's waiting to, like, say the whole time. He's like, oh, you don't think you're good enough for me, you blind bitch.
Like, yeah, it's extremely Ed Kemper. Like,
yeah.
When he was interviewed and they were like, so what happened? I mean, when you, like, you know, murdered that girl. He was like, well, she got in my car and I tried to flirt with her. And let's just say she... This is his quote directly. She got herself killed.
Oh, yeah. Ed Kemper is a fucking douchebag.
Way to victim blame.
But great in Mindhunters, by the way. The guy who plays Ed Kemper in that is fucking phenomenal. Mindhunters, guys. Check it out. So, she asks him out on a date. He says yes. He takes her to go see a sedated tiger, which is... I mean, I guess that's a pretty cool first date. Like for a blind person to get to touch a sedated tiger is pretty cool. Fun movie fact, that was a real sedated tiger in the movie. Like 100% real sedated tiger, and that is an actual veterinarian who's in the movie, like walking with her while she's touching the tiger, listening to its heartbeat and such.
I don't know. I feel like as a lady, your first instinct kind of says like, we went on a first date and he involved sedatives.
Yes.
That's weird. This guy has access to just like large things can be put down at his demand. Like, I don't know about all that.
That tiger can be just like you.
What's more telling is like, imagine Dollarhyde had one friend and he's just like, I met this girl today. I think she's really cool. And he's like, oh, cool. Where are you guys going out? He's like, I'm thinking about taking her to the zoo so we can touch a sedated tiger. Like, the fuck is wrong with you? And everyone would talk him out of this, right? Like, you're a fucking idiot. Why are you taking her? Whatever, dude. Do what you want. Ugh. So
I also saw a dead possum on the side of the road. I'm going to have her drive up and maybe start petting that.
Here, feel this. What does it feel like? Is this? Oh, it's a dead raccoon. Oh, this. I always wanted one of these. Oh, do you think he's okay? Nice, pretty bird. Pretty bird.
His head fell off.
So, she listens to its heartbeats and tears stream down her face. And it's almost as if Francis maybe has a nice side. He seems like a very nice person. Now, back at Francis's place, I mean, he could not have scored a jackpot bigger than this blind bitch, because he's sitting here watching his murder videos while she's just sitting there having a gin and tonic.
Have
you
mentioned the real reason why he's a monster?
Go ahead, Kim.
Rude. Like, this is okay, you took a blind person on a date and you're like, you know, it'd be great if I watched a movie by myself.
Yeah. Hey, could I know you're listening to watching your silent films. Do you have the Braille readout for this so that I could follow along? He's like, and just hands her a basketball. He's like, yeah, this is what I'm watching, lady.
Sorry, my favorite thing is YouTube videos on miming, okay? You're in a relationship with me now. Get used to it.
He's just like, you know, you'll never appreciate me and my love of mime. He's like, honey, I thought it was great. You can't even see it.
What did you smell how great it was, Carol? Did you smell how great it was? Did you touch how great it was, his face? Is that how you know? You're a liar. You're such an enabler.
But as they're sitting there, old Reba starts to get a little bit freaky with him. She grabs his leg and starts making out with this fucking psychopath, and this cool 80s music comes on that's like, ooh, listen how sensual this is. And then,
by far the worst lovemaking scene in any movie ever. So
it's not great, but I don't know,
we did have to watch Nicolas Cage do stuff.
Yeah, he's fucking real gross. But I like that she takes him back into the bedroom and then fucking flies her freak flag and puts the blind grind on him. You know what I mean? Like, it's
grind. Get the fuck out of here.
Did you like the blind grind? No?
Like, I'm a big fan.
She fucking bears down on his weird psychopathic fucking pole. And then, you know, they sit awake for a couple hours while he sits there and creepily listens to her heartbeat. And for a second, Francis has maybe found love. Maybe he won't brutally murder people and shove fucking glass shards into their eyes, you know? Maybe there's a little bit of hope. And I think that's the fun part about, like, the Silence of the Lambs series and Red Dragon, is that there's always a part of, like, each of the serial killers where it's Buffalo Bill that each one of them is so different. You know what I mean? Like, the Red Dragon, very much an abused person, but you kind of feel for him, especially when they give you more of the backstory in, like, the Red Dragon movie, where you find out, okay, he had a horrible upbringing, this was his mom, and then he finds a little bit of love, and then the next thing you know, maybe he could be a regular person, you know? Maybe he doesn't have to be a monster.
Like, he's like the night version, like night version, day version, right? Just walk with me here. Mm-hmm. He's like the night version, like the one that maybe didn't cope so well, of Michael Scott. Like, you know how Michael Scott is, like, way too overenthusiastic and nerdy and emotional, and he wants everybody to be his friends, and he's constantly getting rejected? Mm-hmm. This is the same guy. Red Dragon's the same dude. He probably grew up too close to his mother. He thought everything was going to be great, and then it wasn't. He got his feelings hurt, and instead he turned that into murder, you know?
Yeah, I get it. Like, he gets the proper love and nourishment, and the next thing you know, he's running Dunder Mifflin. Like, that makes sense to me. And then a little bit less love, you become Dwight Schrute, and you go on down the line till you're fucking Sheldon from fucking Big Bang Theory murdering people in front of Green Lantern comics. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen that their killer can fuck. Next, he goes out of the house, and we see Graham go out and he tries to recreate the murder once more. He calls Dr. Lecter before he goes, before he does this, and Lecter gives him some information that he doesn't, that this guy's trying to be God, and he wants to know what it's like to be God. He's like, do you know what it's like to kill somebody, Graham? Do you know what it feels like? And that kind of gives him his inspiration. He goes back to the house, recreates the murder in his eyes. He realizes that what the mirrors are for, finally, so that the killer could see himself, and the ultra vanity of seeing his own reflection as he's murdering somebody was the reason that he's sticking the fucking pieces of mirrors in their eyes and mouth.
Gross.
Now, meanwhile, Francis is stalking his new girlfriend. It's been 24 hours, and he's already parked outside of her house. Clingy.
Stage five.
Right? So he gets heartbroken when he sees a coworker take her back to her house, and it appears that he gives her a big old smooch on the lips, and we get to see the raw power that Francis has as he tears his own dashboard off where he's sitting, which is pretty epic. But then us, the viewer, gets to see that he was just wiping something off of her face. So Francis is in a fury. He gets up, clearly delusional, wiping the tears off of his face, shoots his coworker in the bushes with a silencer multiple times, and then walks into the front door to greet Reba, to letting her know that Francis is gone forever. Next, we see Graham. He breaks down Francis's motivation, ends up watching the videos over and over again, and he finally understands that why he had the bolt cutters at this one part, and why would he bring bolt cutters to here? It wasn't to cut a tree limb. It's because he thought there was a padlock, but there was no padlock there, but he was prepared for other stuff. He realizes that he must have had access to their home photos. How else would he know what was on the inside of the house and have tools to prep for that unless he had access to it, which means he thinks he works at some type of Photoshop or something like that. He checks the home videos, and the home videos have a label on it that says where they came from. Now they have a lead where they think they can find this killer.
Which they later stole in the movie 1 Hour Photo with Robin Williams as the guy who checks everybody's photos. But I, of course,
1 Hour Photo is a creepy ass movie, man. Like, that is an uneasy thing to watch.
It's even creepier than Good Will Hunting. But I worked at Kinko's, of course, and I had to judge people's pictures for calendar things that we made for people. So I had this rather buxom chick come in. She wanted a calendar done, and I was like, okay. She's really nervous. She's really nervous because I'm looking at the photos, and I was like, oh, this is okay. This is okay. Nothing copyrighted here, so I can take pictures. Some of the pictures have her with a gun pointed like a 007 kind of montage thing.
Okay.
And the one that I didn't catch, which I felt bad because I wasn't looking that way, is like, oh, she's kind of sitting there with the gun in her hand. And, of course, I look at the gun. I look at the face. I didn't know that there was also a clear view of her crotch that was in the picture as people are, like, gathering around the copier to make copies. Like, oh, look at this. It's like, oh, damn it. I let that go. I didn't notice she was completely nude for her vajay in that
shot.
And
this is why dick pics became a thing, because for the first time in history, you didn't have to have the photos you took and wanted to send to a lady you're courting a picture of your dick in front of somebody else who's developing the picture. First time in history, you could take a picture, send it right to the recipient. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, but also it opened us up to the world of everybody in the world possibly seeing it, as opposed to a single group of really creepy Jeremy Woodworth-like people.
Yeah, but I never watched Judge Judy the same ever since then, so.
Yeah, true that. Oh, it was pictures from Judge Judy? It was Judge Judy's film that you were... What did that snatch look like? I imagine it looked like a thick...
Well, let me tell you.
Let me look at this. First of all, I don't ever shave, because that's a man's thing. Men induce shaving, and I like it fucking hairy like a Chewbacca down there.
Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games.
So Francis comes over. He abducts her. Graham breaks down everything. Now they have a person of interest as he's making his taking his flight to make it to the suspect Francis's house. Reba wakes up and he is playing some fucking really metal music.
Oh shoot! Here it comes.
And now please rise for our opening hymn. In the Garden of Eden by I, Ron Butterfly.
Now the rest of the movie is in real time with this song.
In the Garden of Eden, honey.
Oh, classic Simpsons line I snuck in there. Do you like that?
Rain and blood.
Always.
No, he's really playing that. He's really playing this music right here, which is Iron Butterfly, not I, Ron Butterfly. Which is, this is pretty good music to kill somebody to, right?
Like, yeah. Good 20
Jeffrey
minutes.
Jeffrey Dahmer used to invite people over while The Exorcist was playing.
I'm ready to murder, honey. Get your eyeballs with that glass now. Don't you know that I'm love you? Francis and
I think that the scariest murder music to play is usually me and my red balloon. So flying my big balloon. So
I mean, you're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong on that one. So they're running out of time. It's Reba is not in a good place right now. As he gets over, he puts her on a table, prepares the glass mirror pieces that he's broken in his bathroom. Jack is worried about Will because Will's got the gun right now with hollow points saying, listen, you're not going to have to take this guy down. We're just going to sit back and look at him as they carry him out. But Will knows different. Will Graham knows that this is going to be a fucking showdown, right? They pull up and they make their way through the dense forest surrounding Francis's house. Graham sees Reba through a window about to get murdered, and he takes about a 200-yard running head start. It makes no sense. The level of head start he tries to get, and he runs full speed through this glass window, crashes in there, immediately gets dominated by this guy. Horrible way to enter the house where he can 100% see you, right? Like, so the Red Dragon makes short work of him, manhandling our hero, throwing him to the ground and slashing his face in the process. But the place is crawling with cops. So Francis goes ahead and grabs a shotgun, and he starts blasting cops left and right. And on top of that, just to show what a monster Hulk-like strength he has, he's shooting like a 12-gauge with a single, like, one-handed, like he's the fucking Terminator. Just like, boom, fucking taking out cops left and right. Comes back in, and Graham is on the floor. He shoots a shotgun at Graham and somehow misses a stationary man lying on the floor and kills a bottle of ketchup instead. Graham is able to return fire, and he don't miss at all. He doesn't blow his chance. Fucking blows our antagonist to smithereens with about 6 hollow points. Graham has saved the day, and Reba can go on being the blind whore she always wanted to be.
With the blind grinds.
Yeah, with the blind. She's ready to find some other serial killer that she can't change.
But first she asks his name before she grinds on him, so.
You right.
My wife's a skeleton.
And that brings us to an end of
Manhunter!
Yeah, it wasn't, you know what, not a bad movie, although I do like how Red Dragon ends, because in Red Dragon, he gets away and then goes to his house and then tries to murder his family, and there's a showdown there, and that's a little bit better of an ending. I like that they got to remake this movie, and you should watch both of them. You should go back, enjoy Manhunter, as much as Jeremy liked to shit on it. It is a very cerebral film. What I will tell you, though, is before you sit down and turn on Manhunter, you need to fire up the sweetest batch of fucking homegrown nugs that you can find.
I'm going to suggest a good concentrate, you know, just something that's packing a lot of terpenes along with the THC. It's going to really just settle in those bones.
Yeah, let it get like a nice body high before you watch this, because you need to like... You need to experience the 80s and ambiance of the film to really enjoy it.
Something about Michael Mann, either he doesn't know how to edit or pacing of a film, that just this movie could have been a lot better at 40 minutes.
I'm a big fan of
it. It has peaks and valleys.
It just slows down and it kills you at certain spots.
I'm a big fan of when a movie is 90 minutes of just raw greatness. Maybe 100 minutes, but when you get to the two-hour mark, you're asking a lot of our over-30 crowd whose bladders just simply aren't what they used to be.
Yes.
So, you know, that is a great movie. You can make your two-hour movie... Just have your hour and a half movie, and the rest is deleted scenes. Like, man, that was a great deleted scene. So,
yeah. I agree with that. I'm gonna add.
You said over 30. I'm gonna add post childbirth to that because I have to like pee like now.
Yeah. I've only heard about what it does down there, but it ain't good from what I've understood. Makes you gotta pee all the time.
But mostly, I have to pee now.
Oh, okay.
No, she's serious. She wants to pee.
Well, Kimberly, before we get you out of here, tell us where people can find you, what's going on, and your social media, and all that jazz.
Social media, as per usual, you can find me at Watch Me Doing This on Twitter, at Panic at the Deli on Instagram. I'm trying to get back up to the second Saturday shit show as soon as I can. I'm trying to transition back into regular life with a newborn. Difficult, but we're doing it. We're making it happen. Hubby's up there holding her now, making quality time happen for us. So it's all good and gravy, one step at a time.
Big ups to Brian Keezy, man, for making this shit happen. We couldn't do it without you, bro. Being the fucking father of the year. We dig it, man. Thank you very much. Big shout outs. what else was I getting at? We have the dick pic contest going on.
Do we get any dick pics?
I haven't gotten any dick pics sent to me yet. Not yet. I blame that all on Jeremy. But I also haven't put it really out on social media yet. So as the social media push for this really starts to happen, that'll really start to take off.
I only handed out at least 150 flyers. So
only 150 flyers?
Well, if you said there was a 250 box, the whole half the box is gone.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that you didn't do it.
And I actually told almost everybody at the Monster Mania, so...
Okay, fair enough. Like you heard earlier, you can find all those things at Watch Me Doing This on Twitter, Panic at the Deli on Instagram. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month, so check that shit out. You can find all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com, Eric with a K, Comedy with a C. Got big murder mystery stuff going on this month. We got DC Improv. I'm going to Vegas on November 3rd. Check that shit out, Eric Comedy. Jeremy, take us out of here.
First you learn to use this, then I'll teach you how to use this. Life out on the road gets very lonely. But I found a friend I can travel with. Sometimes you look back when you're pulling back in life. Got to look behind you, 'cause those are those special times. Dockey with my son. Yeah, we're docking of love. Oh yeah. Driving a truck gets real lonely out on the road, but now I got my boy with me. Though I left my wife, Now I'm here and I'm a big arm wrestler. Gonna put it all on the line. The only thing that matters to me is docking with my son. Yeah, we're docking. Yeah, you're a truck driver, you know what it's about. Docking in the name of love. Me and my son, yeah. We're docking, getting together like a truck and a stop. Yeah, docking.